Hello, it is Tuesday, March 7th.
It is Thursday.
Thursday, March 7th. I'm looking at it, too. Thursday, March 7th. We're used to doing this on Tuesday now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's time to slow your roll. Mm. I'm Jesse Caulfield, writer for the Yakubi Report. That, over there, Dominic Lorenzano, local broadcaster.
Mm.
And we're going to slow your roll today.
Yeah.
You know, with the football season ending, kind of puts a damper on some of the huge news going on, but there is still news to talk about.
I mean, the combine just happened, so it's a lot of draft stuff when it comes to football right now.
A little bit. And also, like, you know, Russell Wilson.
Yep.
You know, I don't want to say forcing because it sounds like we're really reaching for these stories, but there is football to talk about, so we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
And we're kind of almost forcing baseball into the future. We're leaving our baseball.
Well, listen, I want to put off baseball another week because the season starts in like 3 weeks, and, you know, then we do our full show of just full baseball analysis, like preseason stuff. So
yeah,
probably split it up. Like, for 1 week, we'll do the American League. Next week, we'll do the National League. I think that's what I'm leaning on doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, we got some Russell Wilson. We got some NFL Combine. We're going to play a little game called the Fat Lady. It's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
Back what we did last year with, like, a mix of NHL and NBA teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a couple of other things with MLB and baseball and football. But I want you to kick it off.
All right, I'll kick it off. So I will start this. Now, Jesse informs me that it's become a bit more clear now that the Pats are saying they're going to take a quarterback, and that's what they should do. But this idea that I was hearing, they should trade down because – it's too risky. It's too risky to take a quarterback here. We got so many other needs. Is a lame and stupid excuse. And if you run any business, I think, for the most part, any highly competitive business, but especially in sports, if you address something like it's too risky to do that, so we're not going to do it, you're a loser. You're just, especially in football and especially when it comes to the quarterback, you're just accepting the fact that we're going to be okay with being average or mediocre. That's a dumb way to run things. Now, it isn't a dumb way to say the risk is not worth the reward. That's a different conversation. But when it comes to this quarterback stuff, does he have first-round attributes or does he not? That's the only thing we need to evaluate when we talk about risk-reward for the most part with quarterback. And listen, they're all risks. Nobody knows anything until they get on the field and play. If it was that perfect, if everybody knew everything, there wouldn't be so many busts. I hate the idea when people say he has a high floor too. I hate that so much. There is no such thing as a high floor in the NFL at quarterback. There's too many things going on with the position. You don't know what you get. So with that in mind, of the last couple of picks, let me read you some of the scouting reports that some guys did that memorized them. So for the first one, it said inability to look downfield and be able to recognize the rush. Unable to throw on the run. Plays with an invincibility standpoint when throwing. No regard for safeties. That was the scouting report of CJ Stroud coming out of college. Let's go on another one. Plays erratic. Unable to play in rhythm. Can't make throws in rhythm. Lacks pocket awareness. Simply backpedals. Too much backyard football. Special arm. Not much else, and a collegiate athlete. That was the scouting report of Patrick Mahomes coming out of college. The last one, mechanical, powerful arm, not much else. Locks on to one read, unable to go through progression, and slow release. That was Justin Herbert's scouting report coming out of college. Nobody knows anything, all right? It's hard. It's you're rolling the dice on much of this. All I say is, and all most people say is when they go and make the picks, do they have first round attributes that translate to the NFL? Herbert had the arm. Mahomes at least had the arm. CJ Stroud had a great game against Georgia, showed some athleticism, and for the most part showed at least elite level accuracy and a strong enough arm for the NFL. That's all you really need to talk about. If you need a quarterback that badly and you're not a quarterback away where you can just sign a veteran and then be a Super Bowl contender, you probably need to draft one, and that's what you have to ask yourself in that first round. Does he have first round attributes or does he not? Because at the end of the day, the Jets the last couple of years, not last year, but the year before and the year before that, hit on a million picks in the draft. They did great, but they whiffed on the quarterback. They got the quarterback wrong, and that, therefore, it almost as if nothing else mattered. Because quarterback is important, all right? And if you're not a veteran away from being a Super Bowl contender and you have a top pick and there is a first-round talent in the draft available for you to draft, you probably should just take it. I know there's a risk involved, but that's a loser way to run anything in business, all right? It's too risky, even though the reward could be that high, especially when it's something as important as quarterback in the NFL. You have any thoughts?
I mean, if they came out and said, like, yeah, we're going to trade down because we're going to build up the line, get some real weapons in here, and actually when we get the quarterback eventually, he'll be able to play with these guys. Because, like, come on, this offense is trash. And I don't think even Caleb Williams could really save it, even if Caleb Williams is truly the savior of the NFL. I think he is.
But as we just talked about before we started, we're talking about a different conversation a little bit. Because you're going under the idea that just because you draft him, they're also just going to play him right away. That's also stupid. Like, we need to be more like, let's sit a kid down for at least a few weeks.
They don't seem to care about that at
all. I know they don't.
The entire NFL seems to think that idea is dumb.
Okay, but I'm just talking about when you're making draft picks. That's a more execution thing. Like, you can make the right pick and then not run your franchise well. Mm. You know, it's kind of two separate things. But at the end of the day, if there's a first-round quarterback, a highly rated one, like, it's another thing if, like when the Steelers drafted Kenny Pickett. Was he a first-round quarterback? Was he not? It's not like they traded up. It's not like they had a third overall pick and used him. I'm not saying you overdraft people, but if your pick is in a spot that is commensurate with what people think of the quarterback and you need a quarterback that badly, you probably should just pick the kid.
I don't think I agree with that.
Okay, that's fine.
Like would Caleb Williams going to save the Bears? Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, all right, the defense got a little better. There is DJ Moore and the line's okay, and the running backs. But like, all right,
no one is saying that you don't have to do other things well. But at the end of the day, my point is also you can do the other stuff well, and then if you don't have a quarterback, it almost doesn't matter. So,
I mean,
if you're in a spot, if you're in a position to draft a kid that's highly regarded, I mean, he does and he doesn't. Because
how many games these past 3 years? Mm-hmm. Actually, just since Tom Brady left, so 3 years, two. Has it been 3 or 2 with Mac? It's been 3 with Mac.
I think that's an unfair thing because Bill was never in position to draft a kid like they are now.
Yeah, but if your defense is good enough and your quarterback is not, which Cam Newton, Mac Jones did not win them games, like the defense kept it in there.
They did.
So like you don't. Halfway decent QB, you win a lot, not a lot of those, a decent amount of those games.
Okay,
it's one score games.
But they had the smartest defensive mind in football.
I get that.
Okay, and I'm just saying like.
And I do say like this: the D is probably going to be somewhat similar next year, but not nearly play as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is like, if you have a whole team around them, like build the team first.
Okay.
Because at that point, you are literally wasting the draft pick to just ruin a QB.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're going to have to find another one, you probably use a high-end draft pick for that as well. And it's going to go the same way. There's a reason the Jets are in this vicious cycle.
Yeah, because the Jets don't do anything else well.
Well, they play defense well.
Yeah.
Which kind of actually goes a little bit to my point.
Yeah.
But that's kept them in games.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, they got lethargic at the end. And they just, like, even the defense is like, I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
But you know, that kept him in games. And then if you had just someone more caring than Wilson, you win a bunch of games.
I get your point. But you're making it a little bit too... What my thing was, what I did this rant for is because when I initially was being talked about, it wasn't said as if the Pats were going to not take a quarterback because they were thinking, you know, we need to build the team up first. Or, you know, we don't really like anybody here, so we just don't want to use it. It was just like, well, it's just too risky for us. Let's just meet other things. Like, to me, that's a loser mentality. It's just too risky. Now, if they came out and said, we don't think that any of them are worth it, that's fine. That's your grades on stuff. But if you're just saying, oh, it's just such a risk, you know, let's play it safe and draft, like,
I wish you would maybe elaborated on that more.
Yeah.
Like, what, like, I guess you can say, like, we are risking wasting this pick if we draft a QB because we don't think the team is good enough that he'll develop into what he's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And it's like, all right, I get that. Mm-hmm. But you got to explain that more.
Yeah.
You can't just leave it at the risk. Well, like, every draft, every high draft pick is a risk in some form. But, like, you're taking a chance on this kid that he's going to be your franchise-altering guy wherever he may be. Defense, offense, what have you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just sitting there saying, yeah, it is, it's a risk. It's like, yeah, buddy, welcome to the NFL. Yeah. I understand you haven't had, like, a draft pick this high since, like, Bill just got here, basically. But, like, they are risks, friend.
Yeah.
Got to get over that fact.
Yeah.
Got to kind of jump into there.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, if they came out and said, it's a risk, we don't want to take that risk on the QB, we want to play it safe to build up, and then future, we'll get the QB, you know, maybe it's next year's draft or whatever.
Yeah. If you want to articulate it a little bit better, maybe we can have a different conversation, and that's fine. But the idea that, it's just too risky, you know, let's move down and play it safe. Like, that's a loser mentality to run a franchise, especially when it comes to the most important position. And let me talk about the two quarterbacks that stand out to me that were drafted that were considered the high floor, least risky. Like, we don't know what the ceiling is, but, like, he'll be good. It's not going to be a bust. Mac Jones and Josh Rosen. I'm sorry, you got to roll the dice in the NFL at this position.
I also feel like this is kind of coming from a place of, like, the crafts being like, we're going to take over this now. And they're like, we don't really know what to do. Like, we don't actually know how to put a team together here, how to scout at a higher level. Mm. So they're just probably like, Bill always liked to trade down and didn't value high-end quarterbacks. Maybe we should do something like that. And then they got a bunch of crap online, and it was like, let's just scrap the quarterback.
Yeah. I still resent that opinion, though, that Bill didn't whatever high-end quarterbacks. He just was never in a position that he could ever draft the guy who was going to be that highly regarded.
He definitely gave the vibes that he didn't. You know, when you...
He gave the vibe that he cared about the entire team and everything, but I don't think...
He didn't get caught up in QB stuff.
Yeah.
That's why he traded Tom like crap.
But I also think... But I also think that at the end of the day, what was the point in showing or talking about anything else? Because he knew he was never going to be in a position to draft someone that high. He clearly valued quarterback, though, because he was always like, listen, I got to make sure that I have some sort of ulterior plan. And by the way, I always hate that people forget this when they talk about how things went off the rail. Bill had a contingency plan. They made him move it out of town.
Yeah, but even like that contingency plan...
Listen, it
was. I'm not even gonna say like how it turned out of like how Jimmy, but it wasn't a huge like it wasn't a first round pick.
No,
and
but he was never in a position to like draft.
No, I get it. but like that was supposed to be the guy, and I was like, Bill's like, this is my guy. Like I like this guy, and I think I can coach up this guy, and we can have a system with this guy. And you know maybe Bill and Josh McDaniels could have better than San Fran did. Because maybe Bill could have been like, I see his flaws. I can hide them a little better. But I kind of feel like that's still Bill being like, I can find these quarterbacks. I'll find a system guy. He will just listen to me and do what I say, and it'll work out.
Okay. You're usually more the Bill defender and the pro Bill than I am. No, I know you're not insulting, but this one's being flipped. I don't think Bill unvalued it. I just think they were never in a position, and he knew they were never going to be in a position to do it. So
I mean, I don't think they were ever going to be in position to.
And by the way, you say that, but it's come out that he didn't really want Mac, and the crafts made him do it.
No, I know.
So clearly, I don't know if he buys in the high floor thing either.
Well, I will also say, and you know, coming out of New England, take this with a grain of salt, that Bill Belichick was wicked hype about Jaden Daniels. But like, I don't know if that's true.
He could be, though, because you know what, it would make sense that he would be, because Jaden played in two places that he's friends with the people.
LSU and what's the other one?
LSU and he started at Arizona State, where I believe Herm Edwards was originally the coach when he first came on campus.
That's That's where Gronk came from.
Exactly. So it kind of makes sense that he would, which, by the way, brings up a whole nother point with the Kraft's meddling. Nick Saban was Bill's best friend, pretty much. Yeah. And yet Bill didn't want to draft Mac Jones.
Well, yeah.
Come on.
He loves his Alabama defensive guys.
He does.
I don't really remember him drafting.
But
him
Did you watch that special with the sit down with Bill and Saban? You should.
With them talking to each other?
Yeah.
No, I know of it. I don't really.
You should watch that because they talked about how much they communicate in the draft. And then they were also laughing about how much other teams don't communicate with the college ones. Nick Saban brought up a story where someone drafted like one of his linebackers or corners in the first round, and Nick was laughing. And then he got in the camp, was troubled, didn't want to work that hard, and Nick was like, "Yo, all it would have took was one phone call from them. I would have told them that." So the idea that they didn't have a conversation, especially when Kraft was forcing it down his throat, I guarantee Bill and Nick had a conversation.
Oh, I'm sure.
And yet the Krafts ignored Bill.
Oh, I bet. I bet Bill's making constant calls about who's going to draft and stuff like that. And that's kind of why he really loves his Alabamas, his Rutgers, and he has his colleges that he would look at a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. So anyway, but
Bill can't draft though.
Yeah, that's been overdone a little bit. He just can't draft a particular position.
Well, he has trouble with one side of the ball over the other, and there's a couple positions on that side. Wide receiver. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. I'm not going to give him a lot of credit for actually drafting QBs.
Mm-hmm.
He got a little lucky with Tom. We have to admit that.
Yes.
Come on. Sixth-round pick. Even Bill clearly was not that hype about him.
No, I know.
But, I've heard the stories where, he saw his first camp, and he's like, we need to keep this guy
mm-hmm.
here
because mm-hmm.
he'll be something.
Yeah.
So, but the drafting part of Brady,
Yeah. But like I said, if you want to articulate it out, if you want to have a longer term plan for why you're not doing it, fine. That's a little bit okay. But if you're simply in that meeting room, in the war room, it's just too risky for us. We can't bring ourselves to take the risk. You're a loser.
Isn't trading down kind of riskier in some ways? I guess it depends.
But you would think, but what they're saying is, we get an extra pick, so then we have two chances to hit on a position.
I guess. But those top five guys,
but
they don't necessarily always become top five guys, but they're usually he's not a total bust.
And by the way,
very rarely
when we talk about risk, also it's optics, right? If you whiff on the corner or the left tackle, you're not going to get shredded as much as if the quarterback is a whiff.
Sure.
But again, just because you're scared, that's no way to run the operation. I'm too scared to do that, so no. But we can move on if you want to, unless you have something else quick to say on it. But
Bill's great. I love Bill Belichick so much.
Let's move on to rapid fire news.
All right. Let's start with the somber news.
All right.
Chris Mortensen passed away.
He did.
This past week. 72. Mm-hmm. He was one of the good ones at ESPN and all that stuff.
He was.
Yeah. So rest in peace, Chris Mortensen. But, all right, a lot of wheeling and dealing across mm-hmm. multiple leagues
yes.
this past week. So I'm going to get the big ones. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to try to get all of them, but the big ones. Third baseman, Matt Chapman,
mm-hmm.
he's off the list. He signs with the San Francisco Giants. 3 years, $54 million. Matt Chapman, off the list.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping with the baseball real quick, the Phillies. Dave Dombrowski's at it again. Zach Wheeler. Got a 3-year, $126 million extension.
Mm.
The biggest extension in MLB history. And Dave Dombrowski, shocker, he gave the biggest extension in MLB history.
I mean, I like that he only did it for 3 years, though.
That's a lot of money over 3 years.
It is, but it's not a long commitment.
Sure, sure. All right. The Devils, NHL, they have fired their head coach, Lindy Ruff, after it's been a very disappointing season. And Travis Green is now the interim head coach in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Keeping with hockey, trade deadline is Friday. We love the Florida Panthers here. At least we do right now.
Yep.
They made a trade. They traded two mid-round picks for forward Vladimir Tarasenko. So they got faster. I'm a little about it because he cannot play any defense whatsoever. And I'm very cautious about those guys that are just about scoring. Mm-hmm. But hopefully they know what they're doing.
Doesn't the team play good defense, though?
Generally, yes.
Okay.
So I'm hoping they know. And they're going to probably put him on a line with Alexander Barkov, who's the best two-way forward now that Bergeron's not the league. Yeah. Anyway.
I have money on this, so I am very very interested now.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Last bit of wheeling and dealing in hockey. I mean, there's been a bunch, but these are the big ones. Vegas Golden Knights. They did it again. They swooped in, and they traded for star defenseman Noah Hennepin from the Calgary Flames, ruining the Bruins' chance at getting Noah Hennepin.
Okay.
Right. Let's go to football now. Let's wrap it up with some football. Jason Kelce.
Yeah.
He officially retired. We lost the better of the two Kelces.
We have.
Yeah. Rest in peace.
I liked his speech.
I didn't actually watch the press conference.
I didn't watch the whole thing. I just saw some parts of it. But, you know, the Philly special story he was talking about and everything like that. Maybe which, you know, hurts as a Pats fan. Maybe I'll watch it. It was a great story.
Sure. Listen, I like hearing stuff about that, like, you know, the intricate and, like, how
he was getting, like, emotionally choked up while telling it, too.
I did see the picture of him, like, you know, wiping some up.
He's just sitting on that sideline, and he's, like, the biggest balls out there. Nick Foles comes up to coach and just goes, run the Philly special. And Doug just sitting there just... Let's do it.
I did watch the – I mean, it's kind of topic. After that Super Bowl, I did watch the – they have, like, the mic'd up players, and they have, like, a special after the Super Bowl. It's all these mic'd up players from the game. Mm-hmm. And I did remember that clip from Nick Foles. It was Nick Foles' idea to run the Philly special. Mm-hmm. I remember that clip. Anyway, wide receiver Mike Evans has agreed, shockingly, actually, to a 2-year, $52 million extension – just to stay with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, not necessarily an extension – he said he was going to test free agency and then just didn't.
Yeah. I know. I was surprised by that.
$38 million of that guaranteed. So good for Mike Evans. And good for the Bucks.
It kind of tells you that they're probably going to extend Baker, doesn't it?
I thought they did.
Did they officially I just missed it?
I mean, I know they gave him something. I don't know how long it was during the year. I don't know if it's long term or if they just like, where you can come back next year. Okay. I don't remember exactly. Colts. They've used their franchise tag on wide receiver Michael Pittman. Mm. It's worth $28.8 million, another wide receiver that will not reach free agency. Mm-hmm. And finally, for NFL news, and we'll take us into the next segment, the Denver Broncos will be releasing Russell Wilson at the beginning of the new football calendar year. Mm. And so, Tom, you want to start that?
Yeah, I'll start it. Why not? I do think that people are dumping on Russell a little bit too much.
It's just too easy.
I know. We're bringing what happened in the Nathaniel Hackett year too much into this year. He really wasn't bad this year. He played fine. He's a decent quarterback still. But the problem is, and we do this all the time, and this is the thing I bring up when I talk about Justin Fields, too. I'm not saying he's trash. I'm not saying he sucks. But when we're evaluating quarterbacks and other positions in this league, there's a cap hit. There's a cap space. I'm only allowed to spend so much money. So you can be good, and I can be happy with your performance at a certain number, but if I'm paying you a different number, it's no longer acceptable, and you are kind of part of the problem of my team. And he was getting paid far too much money to be a B-minus quarterback. I mean, he was like, what, $45 million cap hit? Deshaun Watson, by the way, same thing in Cleveland right now. Way too much of a cap hit to be B-minus. You have to be A-minus. A-minus at least. I mean, for years, when we say Kirk Cousins has played at a B plus A minus level, and people have still been like, he's kind of a, is he good enough for that? Well, because he's getting paid a certain amount of money. It's also the thing that's annoying me when people try and compare, like, Brock Purdy this year to other quarterbacks. I'm like, guys, no one's saying he's as good as. What we're saying is he makes no money. Therefore, how he's playing right now is great for San Francisco. If I was paying him $35, $40 million, my scrutiny level would be a little different. And it's the same with Russell Wilson right now. I think if he went to the Pittsburgh Steelers right now, I think that they have a chance to make the playoffs again. I think he can still play. His numbers were fine. But again, when you're getting paid that much money, the level of what I'm judging your performance is different. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And it's kind of shocking because, like, you know, give him credit. Yeah, this year, like, you know, it was better this year than without Nathaniel Hackett. Mm-hmm. He showed, you know, a little more of that maturity that I feel like was a little lacking from Russell Wilson the past couple years, at least with the last couple years with Seattle.
Yeah.
But it is a little shocking because he was still, it seemed like, such a high level that last year in Seattle. And then to fall off like that was very shocking.
I know.
Like, you know, because when it first happened, we were hyping up Denver as, oh, you are taking this division now.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You are going to be now the beast of the West over the Chiefs and stuff like that. And it, man, not even close.
No.
So, it was, again, shocking the fall off of Russell Wilson. Because, like, yeah, you can see the signs.
Yes.
Coming in. And it happened so fast. And, yeah, again, bounce back year. And I still think he could play for a different team, a different with a different coach at a decently high level, win some games, maybe even make a run at a playoff if it's on the right team. Why not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. Because we, and also, like, a lot of people were pointing the fingers at Pete Carroll as the problem in Seattle. And it's actually probably Russell Wilson.
A little bit.
We understand a little why. It's QB that's, you know, played at a high level, won a Super Bowl at a young age. Everyone hypes him up at the first couple weeks of the year as, like, an MVP favorite. There's a phrase, let Russ cook. I'm not surprised he got a little full of himself. And then even after he got married to a celebrity, certainly made it even worse.
Oh, yeah, but, for sure.
You know, these are the types of things where, like, know, watch out how you hype up your own quarterback, and like how don't necessarily give your quarterback everything he wants, because he came into Denver and was immediately, again, we hailed him as they're gonna win the division. They are a contender for the Super Bowl despite how they've played the past couple years, just because Russell Wilson.
Yeah,
shocker, it went to his head a little bit.
I know. So his number,
and then shocker, it affected his play on the field a little bit.
So his numbers: 26 touchdowns, 8 picks, and a quarterback rating of 100. So, like, that's not bad.
That's done.
That's decent quarterback play. But again, when you're getting paid the number he is, decent isn't good enough. Mm. And then there's also, Sean Payton took this job because he was offered the amount of money that you couldn't say no to. This was not his first choice. And when it comes to dynamic, like, Russell and Sean could not be more opposite. They are very different players. Russell is very political in a way, like, not actually political, but like politician talk. You know, I don't want to say anything. He probably doesn't really say what's on his mind. He wants to always be squeaky, clean looking, very optimistic. Sean is the complete opposite. Sean is emotional all the time. Sean will tell you how he thinks. Sean is straight to the point. Like, Sean pisses a lot of people off because he doesn't care. He will say whatever the hell's on his mind. He'll be a little bit more on the negative side as well, which is an older coaching thing. Like, they're just so different. And when Russ had the year he had his first year in Denver, and they handed Sean Payton as much money as they did, the owners, we know who was running the organization at this point. And Sean's going to make things in his image the way he wants them to be. And Russell's not his kind of guy. I mean, he had Drew Brees. Like, Russell, even at Russ's best, people who've watched film have talked about this, he does sometimes miss things in the timing and rhythm of the offense. He's kind of like Aaron Rodgers, actually. Aaron does this a lot. Aaron is not a timing in rhythm player a ton. They will miss stuff or just not make throws and then wait for something else. They're both the same on that. Sean is a high offensive IQ guy. He has built his system for over a decade in the NFL. He wants someone to run his system. And he doesn't really want to see a lot of improvising. When he draws something up, he wants it done the way he drew it up. So from the way they play to their personalities, it was never a good match.
Mm. I mean, Sean McVay kind of reminds me a little bit of about Bill.
Mm-hmm.
In the fact that, like, we have a way that I think will help us succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about any other way.
Mm-hmm.
I think this way works. We're going to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks for his guys for his system.
Mm-hmm.
He's not necessarily looking for the best, the sexiest player out there. He wants his guys for his system.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, when Sean came in, one of the first moves they made was pay Jared Stidham a decent amount of money to be a backup. Like, that was already the writing on the wall. That kind of told you what Sean had already thought of everything as he walked into the building.
Sean believes Bill can draft.
I know, right? They're good. I know they talk too.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
Oh, I bet. You know, them being that, you know, I say this with love, dictator style head coaches, I'm shocked that they get along. Wow.
I know, right?
I bet Sean also has a good relationship with Saban.
Yes, he does. But so, yeah. Now, where do you think he goes? I do think the Steelers are the place.
Mm.
Most people think that is. I know some people are like, they're not going to give up on Kenny yet. Because he's a Pittsburgh native, because he's a Pittsburgh kid, and just the culture of the Steelers, they're very patient with coaches, players. They don't want to publicly say they're done with Kenny, so they won't talk about this until the deal is done. But I really think he's going to Pittsburgh. They already made the playoffs, even shuffling through three different quarterbacks, so they know plenty of their rosters ready to go.
Yeah. Well, the defense. The offense, I think, still is questionable, both with personnel and the attitude of said personnel.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I'm wondering, you know, there was a lot of talk about before he moved from Seattle that, like, they were looking for California, New York, Florida, places like that. And then you went to Denver. Okay. So I guess there really wasn't a lot of weight to that. It's more just like, well, if I can win here, like, media follows, media will watch, that type of thing. So maybe, you know, I guess that's an interesting point about, like, oh, they don't, they're going to respect Kenny and all that stuff. Because the rumor I heard was, like, Pittsburgh is, like, it's Kenny and Mason Rudolph competing for that that week one starting job. And it's like, okay, both very on par for Pittsburgh and yet a very strange decision. But, you know, who knows? You know, I thought, like, you know, maybe you could Minnesota with losing Kirk Cousins, but I don't know. I don't really think that fit will work out very well.
Yeah, I don't think Kevin O'Connell, another sort of high IQ offensive guy, Sean McVay tree. I think for the same thing I said about Sean Payton, like, he wants someone who's going to run the offense the way he draws it up, in my opinion.
All right.
Yeah.
I
think the Falcons could make sense as well.
I haven't really heard them linked to anybody, though.
I've heard them linked to Kirk, actually, quite a bit.
Actually, like, that's the one person I've heard them linked to, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, a lot of these, like, teams that kind of need quarterbacks or looking at quarterbacks, like, they're, you know, Bears, Patriots.
Yeah, they're more draft.
They're all looking draft. But so, you know, I feel like there is not a lot of options for actually Russell Wilson right now.
No, I don't think there is.
As opposed to when he was leaving Seattle. And, one, everyone was still hype about him. So.
Yeah. No, I don't think there's a ton of options. I think there's about 3 to 4 options, and mostly 2, and that's the Falcons and the Steelers. I think both make a ton of sense. I know everyone's been talking Justin Fields to the Falcons. Here's the reality of that. Twitter and fans have a way higher opinion of Justin Fields than the league does. Atlanta is more interested in Kirk Cousins than they are in Justin Fields. And they might be more interested in Russell Wilson than they are in Justin Fields. I think Justin is their third option at this point. But
Tennessee.
For the Steelers thing, I know you talked about, you know, where Russ goes mattered to him before. Now with Wilson, though, it's more about getting the career back on the track, so I don't think he really cares where he goes. Plus, also,
sure.
I know Pittsburgh's not a great market, but the Steelers as a franchise are. You know what I mean?
Is it – how? What's the chance of Commanders taking Drake May?
High.
Okay.
I would be
– he's supposed to be like the project one, though, right?
Kind of. But he's probably – he fits the NFL prototype a little bit better than Jaden Daniels does. But I do think I don't think anyone would be shocked if that pick came up and the Commanders ended up taking Jaden Daniels instead.
Okay. If they take Drake May, would it be absolutely ludicrous for them to try to bring in a veteran quarterback to help mentor this supposedly project quarterback?
Yeah, I think it would.
Far-fetched?
Yeah, I think it'd be far-fetched.
Okay.
Yeah, I think all three of
them. Do you think any team would put that as an option?
I mean, you would, but I think both Drake May and Caleb Williams are looked at as if they're going to play right away. Now, Drake needs some polishing, but Drake is also, he has plenty of the tools that he can get by while he figures the rest of the higher level stuff out in the NFL. I could see some people wanting to sit Jaden for a little bit of time, but even then, I think he'll play and start by week at some point during year one. J.J. McCarthy, someone who should sit, and then trying to think who else is in the draft. But, yeah. So, I'd be shocked if the Commanders brought in anybody else.
The New Orleans Saints. That would be funny.
You know, they got their cap issues, though.
They do, but they've juggled that for a very long time, it seems, at this point.
Nah, they brought in Kubiak, I think you know,
because they don't. They're like
tied. But they're stuck with him. They're stuck with him.
We thought the Broncos.
The other one that could be with. The Raiders could be the other one.
I looked at them, but I'm like, they're so heavily going to think draft a guy.
Yeah, but they are in a situation that they might draft someone who they probably want to sit for a year, especially if it was J.J. McCarthy.
I think he'd look better in a Saints uniform.
I think he would, too.
Yeah.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
But I still think it's the Steelers or the Falcons.
Sure. Mm. I don't know. The Saints idea is kind of like tickling my fancy. But you're right. The cap stuff is really...
Yeah. I think they know that they're either going to... They're going to sink or swim with Derek Carr. But for at least another year, they are committed to a point that they can't uncommit. Even though I'm sure privately, behind closed doors, if you ask them, they might... Be like, ah, do you get a redo? They'd be like, yes.
Yeah, we crashed the car.
Yeah, we crashed the car. But they're just, you know, their reality is they don't really have any other options. Any other thoughts on Wilson, especially to the Steelers?
You know what? Good luck wherever he goes. I've never had, like, you know, it's been kind of fun teasing and, you know, busting his balls since he went to... Denver, you know, showing up in prom suits and all that stuff. Like, that's funny, and I'm going to make fun of you. But, like, I've always liked Russell Wilson. I've always enjoyed watching him play. So I kind of still, like, hope he thrives somewhere, and I got to still watch him play for a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
I think I love the fit with the Steelers. I really do. I think, like I said, 26 touchdowns, 8 picks. He doesn't have to be the savior. They have a good defense. There's a good franchise. Like, they're well insulated. They're well run, which, by the way, someone we're going to make fun of later in the show for this. The Steelers are another one. Like, you can't trust what the media is saying, or not even what the media is saying, but you can't trust what the building is saying, because they will not leak anything. If they're moving off Kenny Pickett or Mason Rudolph, there no one's going to say anything, because it's well run. People don't feel the need to save their own skins, save their own jobs, backstabs other people. So they, you know, it stays in the building, at least from a front office standpoint. Sometimes, you know, on the sidelines, you know, they're not always completely buttoned up.
Oh, sure.
But from a upstairs standpoint, the Steelers are about as rock solid as it gets.
Generally, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
why they pick so many misbehaving players, I don't know. You'd think a franchise that is well put together in the front office would be a little better at that. But I guess they really value talent.
They do.
Over maturity.
I guess. And again, you know, sometimes when you have higher picks, right, you have the ability to play that game a little bit more. But when you're picking later in the draft, which the Steelers usually are, the amount of talent that's available to you is far less. So you do have to be more like,
I'll deal with his issue.
Yeah, we'll see if it works. Because at the end of the day, he's far more talented on the board now than just about anybody else. So, yeah. That's the thing. That's the thing about this league. Yeah.
What is Bill? I mean, not to say Bill wouldn't have his misbehaving guys every once in a while. He just drafted what's-his-face, the guy that gambles a lot. Is it Boudet? Boudet?
That's yeah.
Yeah, okay. Boudet. It was him. You know, he has those guys, but, like, generally, Bill whips them into shape.
Mm-hmm.
Or they get cut pretty quick.
Yeah. No, I agree. All right. Last quick one before the break. Let's talk. I know you haven't been watching it.
I would like to. But like, it's Apple TV, and, like, no one does that.
No, I know. But the Dynasty. Now, I haven't been watching the whole thing. I watched a couple of episodes, the ones that really got the most, like, talk about. But the Aaron Hernandez episode is the one. Now, it's it's mostly been a let's crap on Bill Belichick fest, but the Aaron Hernandez one took the cake. And it just goes back to what we've talked about for weeks now with Jonathan taking over this team. It's going to be a disaster. It just has it written all over it. And the Aaron Hernandez episode was so stupid. They're all just crapping on Bill for keeping Aaron here. At one point, Jonathan Kraft was like, I was in the building telling everyone, we got to get rid of him. We got to get him out of here. Shut up, Jonathan. First off, you're saying this years later. So much easier to be Mr. Like,
you know, none of that.
In hindsight. The second thing is, how would that have looked optically? I feel like people forget how amazing Aaron Hernandez was as a player.
The ball.
He was insane. He was actually better than Gronk.
I wouldn't go that far.
Yes, he was.
He was
He was more talented than Gronk. There has not been.
I don't know. I have a heart.
Like, there's almost never been anything quite like Aaron Hernandez.
What is the concrete definition of talent here? Like, was he faster, more athletic? Sure.
Yeah.
Like, part of the reason Gronk was so good was his size and stuff like that.
Okay, but I'm talking about at the time they were playing. Gronk added the other stuff too, the intelligence, the, you know, the high level out. No, like football intelligence. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the idiosyncrasies of his position. Mm. Now, he could always block because he's always big and strong.
Yeah.
But as he got older, the other stuff came together. He became an even more elite, like, route runner. He became able to recognize coverages and defenses on his own and then just do that himself, and Brady would figure it out with him. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But at this point that we're talking about, they were both here playing together at this time. Aaron Hernandez was a freak.
They both were.
But they both were, but Aaron was Aaron literally ran and played as good as a wide receiver and yet was as big and strong as he was. And by the way, everyone calls Travis Kelce a wide receiving tight end. Aaron was, but Aaron also did the other tight end stuff better than Kelce does.
Yeah, he could block.
He could actually block.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I'm not denying any of what you just said about Aaron Hernandez. Okay. I remember him. Mm-hmm. He was insane. Mm-hmm. But Gronk, he scored more touchdowns.
He did. He
had more bigger catches and all that stuff. Like, we, day one, we were hyping up and watching highlights from Gronk. You mm-hmm. know, we had that 3-touchdown game a couple weeks in against the Steelers, his rookie season. Mm-hmm. Aaron Hernandez got a lot of hype here, mm-hmm. but he got almost pushed under the radar because of Gronk. Mm. And then, you know, we lost Gronk in the playoffs, that second Super Bowl run against the Giants. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, got all put on Aaron Hernandez's shoulders. And he did well. Mm-hmm. He picked up the slack more than any tight end has ever been able to do mm-hmm. when Gronk has been injured. Mm-hmm. So I'm not denying all
but
that.
Anyway,
but I still think Gronk's the best.
But to the Jonathan thing, this idea that you got to get him out of here. How?
There was no reports of that.
How would you have gotten him out of here? How would that have looked optically? Like, imagine if Bill had gotten rid of him and he was amazing for two more seasons somewhere else. Like, Jonathan was saying this before the murder thing happened. Like, he was saying, oh, we got to get him out of the building, like, after year one, he said this.
Ah, come on.
Like, you're a loser, dude. Like, you couldn't have done that. How would that have actually looked to Pats fans? How would that have looked to the media? Bill would have been shredded for that. He was one of the best players in the league.
I also just don't believe that that was actually what he was saying at the time.
And even if he was, who cares, Jonathan? You haven't done anything yet. By the way, you still haven't done anything, really. You just took over for what your father did. But this, everything about Jonathan, what Jonathan has done, that episode is another thing to pile on it. He comes across as, this happens in restaurant work a lot. You ever see like the manager who like was like 22, 23, but they give him power and then they overcompensate because they're younger than everybody else? Mm. Feels like that with Jonathan. Not that he's younger than everyone else, but like I got to overcompensate. Mm. No one respects me at the building right now, or I'm afraid they don't because I didn't build it myself. So I gotta bulldoze through everything. I gotta tell everyone I was right on this. This was my decision about that. Like, that's what this feels like. It feels like that person who has to overcompensate.
Did you see the Aaron Hernandez documentary, the Netflix one that came out like 2018?
No, I didn't actually watch that one.
That one was good. I think
I have heard people say it was really good.
No, it was very interesting. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. But there was talk like in that, you know, they talked to a couple teammates, a couple mm-hmm. former teammates. None of the big name Patriots or anything like that, like Tom or any Bill, nothing like that. And they all said, like, you know, he was a good player, a hardworking player, but he didn't necessarily connect with the team mm-hmm. on all that stuff. But like, none of these people that had like actually in the locker room knew him as a teammate. Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, he was kind of like on the not the outside, like they weren't mm-hmm. like they were all fine with him, mm-hmm. but he just didn't hang out with him as much, talk to him as much as like normally the team would. Mm-hmm. amongst each other. But like, again, I never got the vibe, or no one said anything along the lines of like, we didn't like this guy and we wanted him out. Mm-hmm. No one said along that we were creeped out by him, mm-hmm. we were intimidated by him, none mm-hmm. of that stuff. Mm-hmm. They just said like, oh, he just didn't seem like he just kind of like, he had his friends from back home, he always hung out with them and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that was whatever, he just
yeah,
like, but like, again, no one came on and said like, this guy was a terrible locker room president. Like, he intimidated the team. They didn't like him or anything. They wanted him out. Like, nothing. No vibe. The only time they ever said anything is Aaron Hernandez, when he started to be investigated, he requested a trade. And Bill was like, no.
Well, I was just about to say, so on the Dynasty thing, it says that Aaron requested a trade. Part of the reason was he was like, I feel like I've gotten into some bad habits and, like, hang around with some bad people.
Facts.
Here in this area. And he wanted the trade to get out. And, like, the documentary is like posing it as if, oh, Bill wanted him to stay, and therefore it's partly Bill's fault that he went down the avenue that he went. And it's like,
dude,
he's a grown adult. And also, oh, yo, we found bad people here. Ship him out to the West Coast. There's not bad people over there he'd find and associate with. Like, come on, dude. Get the hell out of here.
The documentary, the Netflix one.
You know, yeah, that's another one. You ever see, like, the troubled kid, and then maybe they have a relative, like, on the other side of, like, the country, and they send him to live with them?
Yeah.
That doesn't help. Unless the kid wants to get better, it doesn't help. Yeah. You will find darkness wherever you go.
If you're West Philadelphia born and raised, sending him to Bel Air, it's not going to help him. Just not.
I mean, it might. It might if he realizes that he's been sent there because he needs to change things.
Yeah, then they turn him into a cuck. Right, Will Smith? Anyway, you didn't get it when I said the West Philadelphia.
Yeah, no, I got
it. Okay, all right. Anyway, so again, with the Netflix documentary, they heavily implied that the only reason he requested a trade was after the first double murder, and he was hugely paranoid about that, and then he had the second murder, and he was like, I got to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, he was right. Hanging out with the wrong crowd, all these terrible people. Some of them were on the documentary on Netflix. And it's like, yeah, he was correct. He's hanging out with bad people, bad influences. But Bill kept him there because he was very talented and had no idea that he was murdering people.
Yeah, so like Aaron came to Bill like, hey, you know, I killed two people. Like, you got to ship me out of town.
Yeah. like, no.
Like, this idea that Bill's supposed to know everything that grown adults do in their personal lives. Like, you couldn't have done it. He could not have traded Aaron Hernandez. He couldn't have done it. It would have looked so bad.
I mean, you could have.
It would have looked terrible.
You could have in the fact that people would absolutely line up to get a talent like Aaron Hernandez and pay that price.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
For a team that was winning Super Bowls and in that conversation, it would have looked horrible for Bill and the team.
Yeah. And actually, because like you said, like this whole documentary seems to be about kind of bashing Bill a little bit. And I haven't seen much of it.
By the way, very telling who didn't want to talk on this Aaron Hernandez episode. You know, who didn't refuse to be in this episode?
Gronk.
Tom Brady.
That episode? Is he in the other ones?
Yeah. But he refused to be in this episode.
Did it say that?
Yeah.
Did it say why?
Oh, he didn't say why. They just they were like, Tom wanted nothing to do with this episode.
Hmm. Yeah.
Which means the only perspective I'm getting is Jonathan Kraft.
Okay.
For the most part.
Because I remember, like, when it first happened, like, Gronk was at that interview.
I'm sorry. Gronk's not in the episode either.
Is he another one? Actually, I know he is. It has to be another, because I saw
him. Yeah, no, he's in other ones, but he's not in this episode. So no one from the locker room is in this episode.
If you want to get some locker room perspective, watch the Netflix one.
Yeah.
But, again, the little I've seen of this, I've read a couple articles about, like, you know, the first few episodes, and I saw the trailer when it first came out, and I saw, like, that one clip of, like, when Gronk got drafted. I told you about it. Gronk gets drafted, you know, the family's all jumping up and down, hype on stage. They apparently literally called him while he was on stage because they're watching on TV saying, like, hey, please get off the stage. Like, stop being so hype. And, like, I get it. Like, that is a little dictatorship for the franchise and stuff like that. And I guess that is a little, like, all right, Bill, like, let him have a little bit of fun. But from that clip, the trailer was so, like, you're talking about the greatest sports dynasty in history, and the trailer was so doom and gloom.
I know.
I was like, I don't get it.
I also love the Robert Kraft quote that's in the, that, you know, is in the trailer. I was just trying to hold it all together.
Oh, yeah, I did remember
Okay, Robert.
Yeah. Like, what? Like, come on, dude. Up until, like, the last couple years, there was no signs that anyone was truly disliking anybody there. You know, I'm sure, like, this is football. Yeah, and I know, like, people butt heads.
You know the loudest person?
Bill hypes up the fights at practice, so like, I obviously people get mad at each other. But, like, no one was like, oh, I don't like being here anymore. I don't.
Do you know who the loudest person was for saying anything negative? Giselle Bundchen.
Wait, is she in it?
No. I'm just saying, like, when you go back, who was the loudest person
Associated
with the team about saying anything negative? It was Giselle.
Okay.
Talking about, Tom's not around enough. I want to leave New England. Wes Welker. My husband can't throw and catch.
Remember we watched, we never finished it, Tom versus Time.
I know.
And there was, like, that one episode with, like, Giselle. That was weird. Anyway, it was a different one.
Yeah.
I do want to watch this. Is it at least an interesting watch?
What?
The Dynasty?
Yeah, it is.
Because, like, I definitely want to see it, even if it's just a crap.
The more I watch it, the more it's just making me mad.
Really?
Yeah.
Because
I see Jonathan's stupid face. All right, we gotta move on. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to do Call in the Fat Lady and maybe talk some Kirk Cousins and then a little baseball as well. NFL Combine quarterbacks as well. Stick with us, guys.
All right, we're back. Playing one of our classic games here.
Mm-hmm.
Calling the Fat Lady. You know the rule. If you're a frequent listener, you know the rules. Mm-hmm. End of the regular season, or getting close to the end of the regular season. We pick a couple teams from the current leagues, this being NHL, NBA right now.
Mm-hmm.
And see, you know, those fringe teams just outside looking in or just holding on to that last couple spots. And we ask, is the Fat Lady ready to sing on them? Is their season over mm-hmm. before it's even over?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, mix of NHL, NBA teams. Do you want me to just do mine and go first? Or do you want me to pass it to you? And you go first?
No. Okay. You can just do yours. Right. I'll pass it to you within the sense of, okay.
That's usually
Jesse,
how we gotta do it.
Get us started. You're doing the NHL ones. Yep. I'm doing the NBA ones.
Yes, sir.
Let's start with the Islanders. Is the Fat Lady singing on the Islanders season?
Figured we usually record these games. So
Yeah. I'm not recording mine.
Oh, you're not?
No.
All right.
Record yours. Record
I'll get yours. Some. All right, for the Islanders, is the Fat Lady singing?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go yes, she's singing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, their strength of schedule isn't that bad mm-hmm. for the remaining year. They're one of the bottom ones in the remaining strength of schedule.
Okay.
The problem is, and they're also the last team just outside looking in 4 points back of the final wild card spot. The problem is the Eastern Conference is a lot of teams are jockeying for position right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't see the Islanders overcoming that. You're going to play the Rangers 3 times, which, again, the strength of schedule isn't that bad. But the teams you are playing in the East are just the teams you are going to be battling for that final spot and in the playoffs. Rangers 3 times. You're going to play the best team in the league, the Florida Panthers. Mm. The Flyers are in there. Penguins are in there. Again, I don't think the Penguins are going to get in. But they're going to be playing for their lives as well as you are. And these are just going to be tough games, emotional games for the rest of the way. And I don't think the Islanders are equipped to it. If they still had Barry Trotz back there behind the bench, I'd have a lot more faith in them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not Barry Trotz. So I think the Fat Lady is singing on the New York Islanders season.
Okay.
All right, Dom.
Yes.
From the NBA,
mm-hmm.
one of the more famous teams that everyone loves to talk about constantly.
Yep.
Is the Fat Lady singing on LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers?
I think the Fat Lady is singing on LeBron James and the Lakers. Now, listen, they're 34-30. That means they're only a game out of the last playoff spot. If they miraculously do get that last playoff spot, I still think she might as well be singing because I don't think this team is going to go anywhere. They're not deep enough. They got Austin Reeves going off out of nowhere last year to get them as far as they did in the playoffs. I don't see that happening again. Despite the fact they're only one game out, they do have two teams they're going to have to jump, though. That's the Warriors and the Mavs. The Warriors started the season off really bad, and it seems like they're hitting a stride now. I just don't see it. LeBron's older. AD's older. I don't think they have a lot to go with it. They've been up and down, pretty mediocre all season long. You know, it used to be like clutch time, LeBron and AD, they'll get it done. That hasn't even been really the recipe for success so far, especially when they go up against better competition. They've consistently been outplayed in fourth quarters. I think the Fat Lady might as well just be singing on this Lakers season.
Mm. All right.
Yeah. Jesse, I'll go back to you.
All right.
Is the Fat Lady singing on the Minnesota Wild?
Mm. This one is really interesting to me mm-hmm. because the Minnesota Wild are currently, there's 4 teams they'd have to jump to get that final wild card spot. Mm-hmm. That's a really tough ask. The thing is, those 3 teams in front of them, not in the wild card spot,
mm-hmm.
St. Louis, Seattle, Calgary, all have already started selling for the deadline. Mm-hmm. So they're giving up. Minnesota has so far not. They still are trying, and they're still are talking like they want to try. You know, they've stumbled recently in the past, like, week plus, 2 weeks. But, you know, the month leading into that, they started to get hot. They started to really find their game. So, you know, maybe they are coming down from the hot streak,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not necessarily willing to say that. And the reason why I'm not is because easiest strength of schedule left,
mm-hmm.
Minnesota Wild.
Ah.
It's going to be playing the Blackhawks. You're going to be playing the Coyotes, who are starting to fall apart themselves.
It's because they have that stupid logo.
Yeah, you're going to be playing the Ducks, Sharks, Blackhawks, I said that. And then the teams that are in the playoff spot that you're going to still be facing, not very many of them, Minnesota, it is the Vegas Golden Knights and the Nashville Predators, the two teams in the wild card spots. So it's tough, tough road, a lot that needs to happen for Minnesota. But the path is there. Teams in front of them are selling. They are not. They just came out of the hot streak, so it's possible for them to be hot, be a good team. And they play an easy schedule, and they play the wildcard teams. Yeah. It's there. I'd say she is not singing on them yet.
Okay.
I can't bring myself to ever sing yet on them. All right, Dom.
Yes.
Oops. To wrap this up, you're going to stay in the West. You can stay in California, actually.
I mean, if you look at the East standings, there's not much to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, I tried to do East-West myself, but I get it. Yeah. The Islanders were like...
Well, the Bulls are the closest team on the outside, and they're like 500 in the East. So it's like, there's nothing to talk about in the East.
So talk about this team.
Yes.
The Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, the Golden State Warriors, they sit at 33-28. They're a half game back of the Mavs for that last playoff spot, and I definitely do not think that the Fat Lady is singing on them. Despite the fact they're only a half game above the Lakers, and I think the Fat Lady is singing on the Lakers, the Warriors only have one team to jump. The Warriors at one point were under 500 this year, and now they're over 500. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. I know they got curb stomped by the Celtics.
Yeah.
The Celtics are the best team in the league and kind of, you know, seem to really flourish in the regular season quite a bit. Yes, that was a slight. I am slighting the Celtics because you got to prove it in the playoffs. Yeah. But back to the Warriors. Listen, I got championship pedigree from multiple players on the team. Do I think this team is going to go anywhere in the playoffs? No. Do I think the dynasty is dead? Yes, I do. But there's a winning mentality and a championship mentality to multiple players on the team, unlike the Lakers, who only really have LeBron's championship. They're not want to go out like this. They want to make the playoffs again. They're a really smart team. You know, they are older players, so they take the early part of the season off. There's a reason why they're playing so well now. They have more time together. CP3 they brought in. He's had more time to gel with the rest of the team. Kuminga is coming on. I think they'll actually, not just the Fat Lady isn't singing, I really do think they will overtake the Mavs and make the playoffs. Okay. Also, let's be honest, you know, I missed your no sport is rigged. The NBA is sometimes a little rigged. You're telling me that the NBA is going to allow LeBron and Steph Curry to miss the playoffs? No chance. No chance. Right. You think the league has it bad now? Wait till you see those playoff viewing numbers.
All right.
That would be a disaster.
I don't really have anything to dispute that with. So.
Yeah. No, I know. So that has been it for calling the Fat Lady. Let's move on. Or do a little bit more NFL talk here. Quickly, let's talk the NFL Combine. Now, obviously, I don't think there's a ton to talk about with the Caleb Williams, the Drake May, and the Jaden Daniels anymore. They're the top three quarterbacks, it seems. The rest, there's three that I think are extremely fascinating. Michael Penix, J.J. McCarthy, and Bo Nix. Penix and McCarthy are the most, what's the word? Not controversial, but because that makes it seem like there's like a problem with them specifically. Yeah. But they are the most, I don't know, that you divide a room on opinions. What is the word I'm thinking of? And I just can't think of it.
Let me hit the thesaurus.
Yeah, you do that. But they are the most polarizing. That's what it is, polarizing. Penix, I do think a lot of people see as a second round pick. I don't necessarily disagree with that. But he's got a great arm strength, but he is older, injury history, not totally athletic. I do think, though he has a great arm, people think that the release is kind of slow. The best defense he played was against Michigan, and he looked kind of poor. I mean, I think you even tweeted out, like, you didn't see it. Didn't you watch some of that game? You're like, I think an NFL pass rush would kill him.
Oh, yeah.
So I understand. I certainly wouldn't take him with a top 15 pick. If you need a quarterback, though, when you're drafting, like, in the 25th, spot, I could see rolling the dice on Michael. And even if it's not a long-term fix, at least getting the train back on the tracks for a couple of years. McCarthy is the one that so many people love J.J. McCarthy and so many people hate him. I'm one of those. I hate him. I don't get it. I don't see it. He's not very big. Like, I worry about his size. One person said he looks like a stretched out Bryce Young. Like, he's just taller than Bryce, but he's undersized. Now, he's only a sophomore, redshirt sophomore, though. But so, like, he'll put some on the frame, but I think he's a bit of that Bama quarterback thing at Michigan. I watched their games. Great offensive line. Always had a great run game. Got to throw on play action all the time. When he played better teams, there are plenty of times I watched their games and I thought J.J. McCarthy is kind of the problem with this offense. Now, he's younger than Penix, doesn't have the injury history, and does he have some first-round NFL attributes? Yeah, he's got an NFL arm. I don't think he has an elite NFL arm, but he's got an NFL arm. He can make NFL throws simply by arm strength. He's a little mobile, certainly not mobile as in I would have him run, but he can, you know, at least extend the play a little longer. But I just don't see it. I don't see the special. I think he was on a team that made him look good all the time, and he is polarizing. Like, there are some people who love him. There are some people who hate him. There's some people who think that he should go with a top five pick. There are others who are like, maybe the end of the first round, maybe the second. So
Jim Harbaugh said he should be first.
Well, listen, first he's going to support his guy.
Yeah, I know.
Like, come on.
And also, like, are you surprised? He's a Michigan guy.
Mm-hmm.
Every Michigan cultist is going to say he's the greatest thing since Tom Brady.
I know.
And everyone that doesn't like Michigan is going to say he's a bust. I've never seen more of an obvious bust in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one – there's certain schools, Michigan being one of them, that no one – you can't trust anyone's actual opinion on because they're too opinionated.
Mm-hmm.
They're either a Michigan guy or they hate Michigan for some reason.
Yeah. No, I get you. I mean, I don't know how much you have to add to this because I don't know how much of this you're following still and you don't watch college. I know you don't, but
– I mean, I can add, you know, with the Penix thing and the whole pass rush. That can be taught.
Mm-hmm.
I just mean, like, you know, when I said, like, the whole, like, oh, he's going to get eaten alive by an NFL pass rush, I just mean, like, you know, his rookie year is going to be – very violent for him.
Mm-hmm.
These things can be taught. Of course, he can be taught that.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, he seems like at least that aspect of him is going to be a project and will take time.
Yeah. I think if you're asking yourself for the first two here, Bo Nix and J.J. McCarthy, if you draft J.J., I think you have to be drafting him into a situation where we're okay with him on the bench sitting for a full year. If you have that infrastructure and that's your plan, I still don't think I would suggest you draft him because I just don't really love him, but I don't hate it as much. If you're going to have him play in year one, especially right away, I don't see it at all. For the Penix one, it's reversed. It's the opposite. He can't. He's had too many snaps in college. He's too old. He can't sit at this point. I don't know if there's a ton of more growth. I think he can play in the NFL, but he's a guy. He reminds me of Tua, but with at least a significantly stronger arm. But he needs certain things around him. If you're a top 10 pick, you probably don't have the infrastructure that's going to be able to, you know, help Penix play. Now, if he went to a place like Seattle, where the O-line's good enough, he's surrounded with weapons, you know, a lot of young players, decent defense. Like, I think Michael could work there. And I think it'd be worth Seattle rolling the dice on that one just because, like, Geno's not going to take you to a special place. You have to deal with the loaded Niners and Matthew Stafford in your division. So it's not even like we've talked about in the NFC. You can get away with less good quarterback play because there's not as many good quarterbacks. But in the West, you really can't because you have Kyler in the division, you have Stafford in the division, and you have just a loaded Niners team. So you do need better quarterback play than Geno Smith. I do think that's a place that would make a lot of sense for Penix. I've heard the Raiders. I think that's terrible. He's got Devontae Adams and not much else. Like, you need a lot of infrastructure in place for Penix to be worth drafting to me. Whereas JJ, like I said, I don't care what the team is. JJ needs to sit.
Okay.
So that's my thing on that. Bo Nix is the last one, which, again, earlier on, I didn't think was getting as much love, and now he's getting way more. Bo is another one that I just, could I see him working at some level? Yes. But he's better than Mac, but he is the Mac Jones. Like, I just don't watch the film and see anything special jump off the page. I saw someone tweet out like, oh, Bo Nix could go ahead of Jaden Daniels. And I'm like, why? He didn't play well when he was at Auburn in the SEC against the best competition, right? The SEC has the most NFL players, especially on defense. Jaden Daniels dominated in the SEC. Bo Nix had to leave Auburn and transferred out and went to Oregon. Now, we played really well at Oregon, like, but they also lost both times they faced Washington. So he did lose both times against the best competition he faced. And he got drowned in the SEC. And again, I don't watch him. He seems to me, at best, a low-end starter or a good backup in the NFL. Because a little bit of wiggle, not enough that I think it... Like, I don't think he's going to get around an NFL defensive end. I really don't. The arm's not special. It's good enough. Size, eh, average. Like, there's no NFL trait that jumps off my TV screen when I watch him. So I don't understand why you would draft him that high at all. Because, again, back to the opening. All quarterback are risks. They're all risks. So the reward has to be kind of high. I don't see the high-end reward with Bo. I don't know if you have anything to say.
That last one, I have nothing on that last
game. I figured you didn't. But do you at least see my point with, like, there are things that people don't like about Jaden Daniels. You know, he wasn't really on the NFL radar that much until his last year at LSU. But at the end of the day, neither was Joe Burrow until he lit it up his last year. At least when you light it up at LSU, when you light it up in the best conference in the sport with the most NFL, especially defensive players, as opposed to someone like Bo, who had to leave the SEC and then took off with Oregon his last year there. Which also, Bo's been in college for like 6 years, too. So he also has just way more snaps than everybody.
What was that guy? I think he's on the Rams, the quarterback. Like, he was
Stetson Bennett.
Yeah. They played like 8 years or something. Like,
yeah.
That. It was absurd.
See, like, that's the other thing, too. Like, Bo, after you've been here for like 6 years, you should be really good.
You'd hope.
So I don't know. I don't see it. Like I said, do you get that, my opinion, at least that comparison?
Sure.
But, like, I know he weren't on NFL radars, but once you light it up in the SEC the way Jaden did his last year, like, that's the mini NFL conference. Like, that means something.
I mean, I don't have it, like, definitive, but if you're Bill Belichick's guy, then I'm like, well, then you're my guy.
Yeah.
I believe Bill.
I get you. But
and so, Mac was not, so, like,
Where do you think are some places that would make sense for those three? Now, JJ is going to go the highest of all of them. JJ is probably a top 15 pick.
Raiders.
Okay.
I can see the Raiders taking a guy like him.
Yeah. I think the Raiders would make a ton of sense. I think Denver's the other one. But the Raiders have to be picking before Denver.
I think they are. I
believe okay. They are. But the problem is, right, when you think about this.
Let me bring up draft order.
Are the Raiders going to draft someone that they're going to sit? Because I think the Broncos will. Like, because Sean Payton signed Jared Stidham and pays Jared Stidham for a reason. Yeah. And Sean is an older school guy. So he came in, you know, his model was more of, you know, rookies sit for a little while. Like, I think Denver would be far more patient than the Raiders. I think the Raiders are going to draft someone and want him to play right away.
Well, I definitely think the Raiders are the Broncos would be a lot smarter about.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the Raiders are still, like, you know, they'd rush a guy in there, throw a guy that's not ready out there. I can see them doing that. Hell yeah.
Are you bringing up the draft order right now?
Yes, I have it in front of me.
As for the Penix one, who's in a position where you just need someone who can execute the offense with a good enough arm to make NFL throws? You might not be looking for the long-term option. You just need someone to be better than the guy that you have right now. Who do you think fits that mold? Is there anyone that fits that mold besides Seattle? I guess maybe the Steelers. The Steelers would make sense as well.
I mean,
but you know, maybe, they're getting ranked to Russell. But
maybe Minnesota feels like they're a couple pieces away.
You know what? I didn't think of that. That makes a lot of sense,
especially with because, Flores calling the defense. Like,
yeah,
they suddenly look more confident in that side of the ball.
Yeah, you're a little closer, right, bro? But
I'm doing it all day.
No, I know. I like that one though. No, you're spot on there, because what did he have at Washington? He had a great play caller in Grubbs, the guy, the offensive coordinator, who now will be in Seattle, by the way. He had an NFL wide receiver, an Odunze, who's going to be one of the top three wide receivers taken. Well, if you go to the Vikings, you have Kevin O'Connell. Seems like he's shown to be a pretty talented play caller and offensive mind. Justin Jefferson, you know, the O-line is fine. I think that makes a lot of sense, actually. All right. I actually really like that one.
Because to be honest, I don't have a. I'm not looking at a lot of these teams here that'll be actually that great of a fit. Other than Seattle and
Minnesota.
Because yeah, I mean, I don't. Arizona, no. Houston, definitely not. I mean, a lot of these guys kind of have their. Like, I don't think the Colts will.
No.
Be looking at another QB.
No.
Here's the thing. I haven't heard the Saints looking at any. Being in the mix to draft a QB.
No.
I guess technically they could.
They could, but I just doubt it.
For the future. Yeah. There's maybe that guy that they want to sit.
If they were gonna draft someone, though, it wouldn't be Penix or Nix. Because Penix and Nix are both older players who are seen as more ready to play right away.
Yeah.
Just we don't know what the ceiling is.
I mean, the Jets are always interesting about drafting a quarterback.
Yeah.
I said the Titans should do it again.
I know. They won't, though. They'll stick with Levis.
I guess that's kind of it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I could see the Giants drafting a QB, of course, but, like, you know, their sixth pick, I don't think they'll probably be at least looking at, like, the Jaden Daniels or a Drake May if it's available. And then I could see them being like, well, if we're six and those three are gone, Williams, May, and Daniels, I could see them.
Yeah.
Not going QB at all.
No, and we talked about this in quarterback to not to quarterback. I said the Giants should not. Because, listen, they have so many other needs. You've already stupidly invested financially in Daniel Jones. You have to ride it out another year. Like, you know. But I think the only one, the Raiders and Denver probably make the most sense for J.J. McCarthy. Denver's the better fit because I think the Raiders are going to want someone to play sooner. Like, Sean, like, you talked about this. Am I right, you think, on Denver? Like, Sean Payton, he came into this league where you sat at least a year.
Yeah.
He paid Jared Stidham a good amount of money. So he clearly thinks somewhat highly of Stidham. Now, I don't think he's not dumb. I don't think he's winning the Super Bowl with him.
Sure.
I don't think he thinks that. But he does. He sees him as someone who I think he thinks he can win games with. And by the way, he won games with Teddy Bridgewater and Jameis Winston. So he probably sees him in that class, which I don't think he's completely wrong on.
Sure. Sure.
And yeah, to me, you let Russell go unless you're dumb enough to think Jared Stidham's your long-term option. But I don't think they think that. They have to have another plan.
Yeah.
And I think McCarthy makes the most sense.
I mean, I guess the plan could possibly be, well, we'll cut the guy, cut the QB, and maybe we'll tank for you. But I don't know. There's still other pieces here.
I don't think Sean.
It's never been Sean's style.
Yeah, I don't think Sean's capable of tanking.
Yeah.
<It's just> not, that's not the way that he does business.
He's trying to tank and he just keeps saying the correct play. It's like, we're moving the ball too well.
So I think those are the ones that make the most sense. But I'll come out on the thing right now. I don't like J.J. McCarthy at all. I don't really love Bo Nix much either. So if I had a first round pick, I definitely wouldn't take Bo. I think Bo's a second round guy.
All right, here's the most far-fetched idea I've ever.
What?
He's going to go to the Chargers, and the Chargers are going to move on from Herbert.
Yeah,
that's what Harbaugh wants.
That's not going to happen. Jim took that job because of Herbert. That's also why Jim feels, you know, Jim might not even love JJ as much as he talks about, but that's why Jim can come out and say whatever he wants, because he's like, I'm not in a position where I'm going to draft him anyway. So it's not like everyone's going to be like, well, you love him so much, why don't you draft him? Be like, oh, I got Justin Herbert. And, man, by the way, I'm in the NFL now. Maybe I can get someone to draft a quarterback that I don't actually think is that good.
Oh, maybe. Maybe.
What if he was playing that game? Listen, well, you know, I know the Raiders.
Then he played his hand.
Then I know the Raiders and Denver both need a quarterback. Let me just – J.J. McCarthy is just so good.
I mean, possibly.
That's some 4D chess.
Yeah, but I think he overplayed his hand then, saying number one pick potential. Everyone was probably like, no.
I feel like you're trying too hard.
Listen, maybe a couple years ago or just one of those really light drafts. Maybe.
Yeah, not this one.
Not one with Caleb Williams? No, I don't think so.
No. All right, quickly, Kirk Cousins. Let's talk Cousins. I'll let you start. Where do you think makes the most sense for Cousins? Where do you see him going?
I mean, I guess a couple of things make sense would be like, you know, I put the Patriots out there in terms of like if they want a veteran guy and a young guy, but I guess if it's Jaden Daniels,
the problem
kind
with
of
the
a waste,
but the problem with the Pats is you don't have a wide receiver for him to throw to him, and he's coming off an Achilles tear, and your O-line still sucks.
Bro, I don't know how you could be in that building and think you have any chance to win anything next year.
Well, then, so why would you spend money on a quarterback?
Because he's a veteran.
I guess. But
and he could teach a young man.
That's true, but, you know. I
don't think the Patriots are going to do it.
I don't think they will either.
But it's just, it's other than the Atlanta Falcons, what everyone seems to think.
Because
I'm not just going to sit here and go, like, I agree with everyone. I think the Atlanta Falcons are on the table. Sure, I agree with everyone. The Atlanta Falcons are on the table and probably the favorite. But that's not interesting to talk about.
No.
So, you know, you said Steelers with Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. What if they don't get Russell Wilson?
No, I know.
They like those veteran guys.
They do.
They could be Kirk.
Yeah.
It could be Kirk.
I think Kirk would make a ton of sense for them.
Yeah.
I think Kirk instantly turns them into, like, I think almost just as good odds to win their division as the Ravens or the Bengals.
Really?
I do. Dude, he's playing at a really high level.
He plays, all right, relax. He plays fine. He plays smart football. He generally tries to play the mistake-free football style of game. And that's not a losing formula.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't necessarily call it a winning formula.
I think he's being underrated. I think since Kevin O'Connell got there, the rate at which what Kirk Cousins has gotten better is pretty significant. And I think he's reached that. Now, I'm not comparing him to this guy, so understand. Let me explain when I say it. He's reached that Brady late in his career level where Tom talked about, like, the game's just getting easier for me.
Mm.
I think Kirk has reached that, where he's just like, yo, I've seen everything. And I'm so confident that I've seen everything. And by the way, we talk about coaching changes all the time. I don't think necessarily that the league is getting more complicated. I think it's getting simpler.
Hmm.
So I think Kirk has reached that beautiful Goldilocks zone of, you've played long enough that you've now seen everything, but you haven't played so long that you've completely declined physically, so you can still execute at a high level.
Sure. I mean, quarterback is a very... I'm going to talk about how mental that position actually is, pre-snap reads and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I mentioned it on here, but I know I told it to you. There's that clip of Patrick Mahomes on the Kelce podcast talking about when he played the Patriots, and like they put a defense, and he was thinking to himself, I have no idea how I'm going to get these guys blocked and stuff like that, and how that made him a better QB, because now if he doesn't go into a game feeling like he's fully prepared for whatever they're going to throw at him, he doesn't feel prepared at all.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirk is a smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been around for a while. So, like, yeah, when you see all these things again and again, yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I could see the mental aspect certainly getting a lot easier for a veteran QB.
Mm-hmm.
You can't fool me anymore, that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I understand what you're going to throw at me. I understand, like, he probably understands the exact game plan they want to throw out every week for a guy like him at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's a coincidence that the last couple of years he gets a little better. When a Justin Jefferson comes to town,
mm-hmm.
when a O'Connell comes to town, mm-hmm. and how well he is playing. Like, obviously, every player in the league, especially quarterbacks, will benefit mm-hmm. from a great play caller, a great wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone made the same jokes about Kirk Cousins, and some may still do,
mm-hmm.
until Justin Jefferson and O'Connell showed up.
Oh, okay. I get that. But I just think he got a better wide receiver and a better coach to therefore get him to the next level. Listen, Kirk's a guy who's not talented enough that, like, he does need some support and help, a good amount. But I do think he is he's a better player. It's not just O'Connell and Jefferson. I do think he's actually a better player than he was 3-4 years ago. I think he's more, I think he used to play a little more scared than he does now. I think he's more willing to, like, let it rip down the field. I think he's more confident in what he sees. I just think he reads things faster and gets the ball out with more confidence and faster. I just do. And I think part of that is he's been now in the league so long. And as Tom talked about, I think the league's getting simpler because you run through coaches all the time.
I guess.
The other thing, too, when you're comparing Kirk and Russ, I'm not trying to say Russ doesn't work hard, because I'm sure he does, especially on his body and his physique and his, like, ability to be healthy.
Yeah.
But when you're someone who's as talented as Russ was, an improviser, a playmaker on your own, the mental part of the game, especially the X's and O's in the film, you don't take as seriously, or at least you don't work as hard as someone who knows they're physically limited and therefore needs to be perfect at that.
Perhaps, yeah.
I think Kirk has always understood his limitations and therefore has always made sure that that part of his game he works so hard at and is as prepared as he can be. And now you get into a situation where Kirk's not mobile, but he was never mobile, and Russ is declining, who used his movement. Well, to me, I think Kirk is the better option at this point. Because I have someone in Kirk who is at least, the way he plays, even after an Achilles injury, it's not going to be that much different than the way he always played. Whereas Russ has going to have to every year constantly adjust to actually where he's at physically.
Maybe. We do also have to see how he, you know, comes back from the Achilles at his age.
But mobility was never part of his game anyway, though. That's my point.
No, I know. I'm not worried about him moving the pocket ever.
Yeah, you're more worried about if he gets injured again. I understand.
Yeah, and also, like, you know, just stepping into things, stepping back, and all this other stuff. And sure, yeah, it's just you look at it and like, oh, he's at risk of re-injuring that stuff. But with the Russell Wilson, Kirk Cousins stuff, you know, there's certainly some things I can say like, well, Kirk Cousins is definitely better at this and that. And I think, you know, I've never heard a bad thing about Kirk Cousins, the man, the player. He is beloved.
Yes, they are.
In the locker rooms that he in. And Russell Wilson, not so much.
Yeah.
Seems to rub his teammates the wrong way, you know, doing, yeah, yeah. Hard worker. Mm-hmm. So much so he exercises in the middle of a flight to London while everyone's trying to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So hard worker, doesn't understand when to work, it seems. And, you know, there is things to be said about that. You know, part of the reason maybe it's not working in Denver for Russell Wilson is the fact that, like, he is not gelling with these guys and they don't like him and stuff like that. Well, mm-hmm. Meanwhile, in Seattle, like, he grew up with those guys in the league for the most part. But in terms of physicality, like, you know, Russell Wilson is just so, even to this point, I kind of feel it's just so much more talented than Kirk. That you're right. Kirk does have to, and I think he does know that he has to rely on his intelligence playing mistake-free football. It's not a winning mentality. It's a losing mentality. It's a non-losing mentality. And that's, you know, I don't think at this point Russell Wilson can really get you over the top. But, like, Kirk Cousins, I don't think could ever.
Okay.
And I still don't think.
Okay. So, if you were the Steelers, who do you think is the better option for you? See, I'm going to say I think Kirk is.
I kind of actually will say that as well.
Because we have some dramatic people in the locker room.
Yes.
You know, some younger guys.
100%.
Like, I think Kirk is the adult in the room who can take the temperature of the room down. Like, yeah. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just the better leader.
People like playing with him.
Yes.
People like playing for him.
Yeah.
Steelers, yeah, Kirk, I could definitely see a much more fit locker room-wise, teammate-wise than Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, let's say Atlanta's looking at both
Falcons,
of them as well.
Falcons, maybe Wilson's a little bit better of a fit. That could be true.
Because, you know, I've heard no real problems about, like,
locker room
stuff, any of that, any misbehaving players, any non-committed players, any stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they really need talent.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, yeah, Pittsburgh, because of the locker room stuff, the culture, Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
But Atlanta, because, you know, just I still think Russ is more talented.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Russ. I don't think that's necessarily wrong. And I'm going to say this again, guys. I've never seen a low-end starter in this league or backup defended like Justin Fields. I'm sorry. The NFL's opinion is much different than what Twitter's and the fans' opinion is. Kirk Cousins and Russell Wilson are higher on the Falcons and Steelers list than Justin Fields is.
Probably.
Yeah. Oh, no, they are.
Well, and also, like, you know, somebody said, like, Kirk Cousins was so...
I think Fields hasn't been dealt yet because the Bears were sitting there thinking they were going to get a better pick than what they're being offered right now.
Mm. But also, like, Kirk Cousins was so average.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally, like, the most average QB I've ever seen for the first couple years of his career that he invented his own category of QB, Kirk Cousins.
Yes.
But, like, I do think at this point he is the best Kirk Cousins in the Kirk Cousins category.
No, I get your point, though. All right. Moving on. Final topic before the Darwin. We're going to, you know, we're not doing our full baseball preview yet. That'll probably be next week and the week after. We'll do the American and National League. But some quick baseball stuff. This is the gambling segment. It's not the gambling because I'm not saying.
It's like it.
I'm not saying for you to bet on these. Because I actually don't even know, Jesse, what you're throwing at me.
Actually, this first one, I think you will say bad on.
This is gut reaction time. So Jesse Caulfield is going to tell me some MLB teams over or under win totals, and I will have to gut react on what I think.
And these are the DraftKings from last night.
Okay.
But this first one shocked me.
Okay.
And I think you're going to say bet on what you're going to, and I know which one you're going to pick.
Okay.
The Arizona Diamondbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Their win total. It's at 83.5.
Yep.
What do you think about that?
I think that's way too low. I think, you know, baseball, among more than any others, I have this issue with the Baltimore one as well, is the nerds just go in there and they go through the numbers of last year. Oh, they won all these one-run games. That's random. You know, you can't count on that. So they're going to regress. What they don't realize is, like, does the team have a bunch of players that should be ascending? And the Diamondbacks do. Corbin Carroll, MVP candidate. Trendy pick by a lot of baseball people to maybe win the MVP this year. They added Eduardo Rodriguez to that. Zach Gallen has been a top-end starter for a while. Do they still have some bullpen issues? Yes. Do they have some kids? Listen, bullpen fluctuates year to year. You can have the same guys and have it be bad one year and good the next year. Could be good this year. More kids. They're going to call Jordan Lawler. Could take over at shortstop at some point. Another year for the kid McCarthy out there in the outfield. Yeah, I think 83.5 is too low. The Padres are a worse team than this year. For some reason, Vegas always thinks the Giants are going to be better than I ever do.
I only saw the Giants. I don't have them on my list here.
No, I know.
But I saw them at 81.5.
Yeah, like I think there's three teams that the Diamondbacks could beat up on in this division.
Well, do you think the Dodgers spending $1 billion had a lot to do with this being so low?
Probably. And listen, the Dodgers are going to win the division. The Dodgers are going to win a ton of games. But 83.5 to me just seems too low. Mm-hmm. I think there's too many young players who have great pedigree already who are ascending. Yeah, I think this team's winning 86, 87 games.
All right. How about because you mentioned the bullpen?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the concerns with the back half of that bullpen are like actual, like legit concerns?
There are some concerns,
Seawall blew some saves in that playoffs.
He did.
I wonder if he's shaken.
But you get at least an established closer where they didn't have one most of the year last year. At least they have Seawall for the entire year.
Maybe, but like again, like he blew some big saves in that playoff.
He did.
Is he a broken man now?
I think he'll be okay. I think blowing saves when you play in Arizona is not the same as blowing saves when you play in New York or Boston. I think he'll be okay.
Blowing saves in Boston doesn't mean anything anymore. They're rooting for that, probably.
I know, right?
We good with Arizona?
Yeah, we're good with Arizona.
All right. Let's go to Minnesota. Minnesota Twins.
Okay.
They was at 86.5
mm-hmm.
for the win total.
All right. This is actually one. This is funny. I'm glad you put this one in. This one I have bet. And I have bet the under. They got Cy Young performances for the first like 2.5 months of the season from Sonny Gray and Joe Ryan last year. That's why they won as many games as they do. Buxton's going to be hurt by, you know, a month through the season. I don't see where they're going to score runs. Maybe some people think that like Correa was so awful last year, he can't be that awful again. They got a couple of kids that maybe that can be the difference to help them score runs, but Sonny Gray walked out the building. He's gone. Joe Ryan was a mess at the end of the year. I just don't see it with them. Kenta Maeda is gone too. Like, I think this is a bad team. Like, I kind of think they're finishing third or fourth. I don't see it. I don't see where they're going to score enough runs. I don't see where the high-end starting pitching comes from. I don't like anything about this team. And at 88, no, I really don't. At 86.5, I'm under all day. I think this is a 77 win team.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you remember that year where like Minnesota randomly hit the most home runs in MLB history?
Yes.
That was bizarre.
That was bizarre. You can push back, by the way, on any of these if you disagree with me.
Well, I asked some questions about Arizona and maybe I don't want to say, I guess, when it wasn't pushback, but some reasons why it might be that. To be honest, with Minnesota, I thought this one was a little more like, okay, yeah, if they're going to be the ones that win in the division, because, like, you know, I mean, the Royals maybe took a step forward. I don't really – I mean, also, Vegas doesn't really think they're going to take a step forward, winning, like, 70 in the 70-game mark. So, all right, step forward from a tragic performance last year, but they're still not there yet. White Sox will probably be worse. Guardians, I have no idea. I really don't.
So here's the thing with the Guardians. I think there's value on betting the Guardians to win their division. I think the Tigers win the division, though. But the Guardians at least have such a great pedigree of young starters. Most of them are still there. You have BB. You have Gavin Williams. Now, I have zero confidence Tristan McKenzie can stay healthy. But if he can, that's a really great top of the rotation. And I know they at least have two young kids who have a chance to break camp and start. If both of them did immediately adjust to the bigs right away, it gives them the offense that they need, and they win. And they in a bad division, you know, they go from a team that's 77 wins quickly to a team that's 83-84 wins. So I think the Guardians and the Tigers have young kids that are ascending, and if they adjust right away and play well, they can win the division. I don't see the go either ways for the Twins. I just don't.
Okay.
Yeah.
I also, the Guardians, they lost Terry.
They did.
And I do wonder how much Terry kept them afloat when they were.
Yeah, that's fair.
Steven Vogue, rookie manager. So
yeah, that's right. Fair.
We can move on, though.
Yep.
Let's go back to the National League.
All right.
Philadelphia Phillies.
All right.
At 90.5.
I don't have a lean here. I'm just going to say Vegas is right. Vegas is spot on with this one. 90.5 is about where I see it. Listen, I think the Braves are tough. They're going to win a lot of games in that division. I think the Marlins are decent. You know, did they have some luck last year? Yes. But I don't think there's one punching bag in the division, and that's the Nationals. Now, the Mets could be a punching bag as well, I guess. The Phillies do have some older players, though, that you think they were able to stay pretty healthy last year. All it takes is, like, an injury to Nola or Wheeler, and, like, they could be spinning a little bit. I think about 90.5 is about where they should be. Do they have the talent to win far more games than 90.5? Yes. But they don't have the depth like the Braves do. So really all it does take is a Castellanos, a Harper, or especially an injury to Nola or Wheeler, and like they'll be spinning the tires a little bit. So I think Vegas has that right.
Nola's kind of struggled last year.
He did. At times.
And yeah, you said last year, like, yeah, you kind of think this is just who Nola's going to be now. Like, he's kind of coming down.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you think he's just kind of an average starting pitcher?
He's a little better than average, but he's certainly not a front of the rotation guy anymore. I think he's a solid two, and he'd be a really good three, like a great three. Like, you got a real good rotation if he's your three. But I don't think he's a one anymore.
All right. And you mentioned that the Nationals could be the punching bag in that division. They, I don't want to call it played well at the end of last season, but they played better.
Yes, they did.
At the end of last season.
Yeah.
Something to build on there. Maybe some young kids coming up. They're like, hopefully, at least.
Yeah.
Not to turn into a punching bag, at least.
Yeah. No, 100%. Like I said, I think 90.5 is about right. I think Vegas has that right.
All right.
They're a good high-end team, but they don't have depth.
Okay. All right. Do you want to move on then?
Yep. Last one.
All right. I debated between these two, but we'll talk about one team a lot, so we won't do the Red Sox.
Okay.
I'll do one of my other favorite teams to talk about, though, Seattle Mariners.
Okay.
Just missed out in the playoffs last year.
Okay.
Collapsed a little bit at the end.
Okay.
87.5 wins.
Ooh. Wow, that's higher than I thought Vegas would have them ranked.
Okay.
Now, I don't think Vegas is wrong, but I thought this one's really throwing me for a loop.
Can I give you the Astros as well? Because it shocked me, and I think that had a little bit to do with it.
Okay, what's the Astros?
90.
That doesn't shock me too much.
I thought it'd be a little higher.
Okay, I get you. See, you said Seattle Mariners, and I thought for sure I was going to say over. I think Vegas has this right at 87. Now, they're going to pick up more wins this year because the Rangers are going to start the season significantly crippled. DeGrom's still not back. Montgomery's gone. Someone else is hurt for them, too, and I just can't think of who it is. But I know they're not healthy at all coming into the start of the season. Is Corey Seager going to be an MVP again like that too? Like I'm not crapping on the Rangers. They'll be in contention. If you told me they finished ahead of the Mariners, I wouldn't be shocked. But they're not going to be as good as they were last year. So the Mariners pick up some wins that way. You know, Mariners have about as lethal of pitching as you can have. Logan Gilbert looked like he really turned the corner the second half of last year. Great pedigree there. High-end prospect. Great stuff. They got another one, too. Munoz starts the year healthy, whereas he didn't last year. I think the Mariners are a sneaky bet where, depending on if you get really good odds, if you're getting like plus 400 or above, I don't think it's a terrible idea to throw like 25, 30 bucks on them to win the division. But sitting at 87 wins, 87 and a half, I think Vegas has that one spot on. I wouldn't really wager under or over.
All right. I don't have too much to say about that one.
Okay. Now, were you surprised how high Vegas had the win total?
For Seattle?
Yes.
A little bit.
Okay.
I was kind of thinking.
Now, you like Seattle. I know you do. But you just didn't think that Vegas and the public would be as high on it.
Define like. Do I think they're fun and players are fun to watch? Yes. Mm-hmm. But they are still in a division with the
Seattle.
Astros, who's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, Texas just won the World Series. So, like, you know, there's reasons to say, like, all right, Seattle's time isn't – it actually isn't right now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I do like them. I like them a lot. But I was thinking I could see that at 85
mm-hmm.
for the Seattle win total.
Yeah. All right, so the starting rotation is Luis Castillo, George Kirby, Logan Gilbert, Bryce Miller, I forgot about, and Brian Wu. Those are all five major league starters. I don't see – now, I don't think Wu is that great. I think his ceiling is about a fourth or fifth, but that's where they have him slated. Bryce Miller has good stuff. Bryce Miller could be a really good pitcher. And Kirby and Gilbert look like they turned the corner. Luis Castillo has been an upper-end starter for a while. So,
yeah.
Now, does offense still worry me a little bit? Yeah. Ty France, Jorge Polanco, Josh Rojas, J.P. Crawford, Mitch Haniger, Julio Rodriguez, Luke Rayleigh, Mitch Garver. It's not exactly a lineup that strikes fear into me.
Yeah.
But with that great pitching and that great of a bullpen as well, like, they're going to win a lot of games. All right.
Well, just real quick, 77.5 for Boston. That's silly, right?
Under.
Yeah.
Under. Yeah. 100% under.
All right.
Yeah. I think the division's loaded. I think they're going to get destroyed a lot.
Good happen.
I think they're – what do you think they're going to win? I'm going to go 74.
71.
Oof.
Yeah.
They could be that low, too. I wouldn't be shocked. All right. I don't think they'll lose 100 games, though. I don't think quite that bad. They're going to score.
They'll
score enough runs.
Yeah, that's really bad.
Yeah. But, yeah, low 70s for sure, I could see. All right. With that, we're getting ready to finish it up. Last segment, our Darwin, as always. Drum roll, please. This week's Darwin Award winner is Robert Saleh and the New York Jets. And I'll tell you why. We talk about this quite a bit. You know, right? When you're a good front office, a good organization, we don't know everything because you don't let it leave the building.
We know very little usually.
Yeah. You don't just let everyone, no one just goes and talks to the media. When you're the Jets and the Browns for years, like everything gets out. Everyone's talking about everything.
Actually, the level that things get out for the New York Jets
is
unprecedented.
No, yeah. I actually think it's as much as I call the Bears the... No, I don't call them the most dysfunctional. I call the Bears the worst run. But yeah, I don't know if anything leaks out of a building quite like the Jets. You might be right. That might be the most. It's like somebody sneezes, I know about it 10 minutes later. But anyway, so Robert Saleh. Now, there's this trendy younger coach thing where they think the NFL Combine is dumb. Like, they think it's a waste of their time. You know, they don't pick the players for the most part anyway, so why should they bother? You know, the Shanahan tree, the Sean McVay, Kevin O'Connell, these guys, they don't go to the NFL Combine. The old guys do. Andy Reid just won a Super Bowl. He was at the Combine. Sean Payton was at the Combine. But these younger guys, they don't. But it's Robert Saleh was going to be one of those young, trendy guys. It's a waste of my time. I'm not going to go. This is stupid. And then it came out that the Jets front office was not happy about that. And the owner was not happy about that. And you know why it looks so dumb? Because if Sean and Kyle, who have, you know, made the last two Super Bowls and won a ton of games, If they say no to something, the owner and the front office can't really tell them, like, it's harder for them to tell them they have to do something. Robert Saleh, you haven't had a winning season yet. You're not in a position that you could just say no to stuff. And to then have it leak out, too, that the front office was like, sat him down and was like, no, you're going, dude. Like, this is not an option. I think is just so hilarious for both segments, for both parts, right? The fact that all it took was the report came out that Saleh wasn't going 3 days before the combine. Day one of the combine happened. And then the next day, the report was out that the Jets were mad that Saleh wasn't going, and they made him get on a flight, and he was going to be there by day two of the combine. So it's funny from the standpoint of Saleh to think that you're Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan, and you can just say no to stuff. Like, you have no chips. Like, you haven't had a winning season yet. Like, you can't just say no to stuff. But also funny that all it took was, I don't know, 48 hours of the conversation happening, and it was already out in the media. Like, someone in the building was already like, yeah, I'm going to go talk to somebody, stab this guy in the back. This just shows what a dysfunctional mess the Jets are.
I wonder if it was Aaron Rodgers.
I don't think it was Aaron.
I don't actually think it
was. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, I just love to watch the Jets suck flounder like this. It's just constant. It's always something. It's always something there. And, I mean, I can't believe Robert Saleh, of all people, is like, I'm too important to go. When you're taking orders from your QB who played one snap?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, big man.
Yeah. It's just like, where did you think that you could, were in a position that you could just tell your bosses no to stuff?
Yeah.
Like, no.
You can't tell your subordinates no to stuff.
Yeah. So I'm going to be able to tell my bosses, nah.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to do that. Like, nah. Maybe it's not, what is it called? When something is technically not, like, you don't have to do it.
Oh, it's not a necessity?
Yeah. Not necessity. I don't know what you want to call
it. Not a...
We're not making you do it, but, like, we're kind of making you do it. Like, you really should show up and go.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like that. And it's like, yeah, there's a small group of people who, when things are not mandated but suggested, can actually say no. Most people, if it's suggested, they expect you to go. Robert, you haven't had a winning season yet. If it's suggested, what they're really saying is you have to do it. So, congratulations to the New York Jets and Robert Saleh, this week's Darwin Award winner. That has been it for Slow Your Roll. Either next week or the week after, we will start our MLB preview stuff, so that'll be coming around the corner. Have a great rest of your week, ladies and gentlemen.